times I thought we'd never make it. Now we on our way to greatness. And all I ever took was patience.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You have just tuned in to Hip Hop Caucus. Think 100% the coolest show on climate change. I'm going to say that one more time. The coolest show on climate change. I am Rev Ewart, president and CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus. And on the line, we have the amazing Anthony Smith. Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Man, we can hear you loud and clear. Tell folks who you are, Anthony.
I am a Grammy-nominated singer and a film, TV, and Broadway actress, and an activist, also known as an artivist. And I'm so happy to be a co-host of Think 100%, which is truly indeed the coolest show on climate change.
Wait a minute, she hits with the trifecta. Okay.
Hey.
I like that. I like that. And I am Mustafa Santiago Ali, Senior Vice President of the Hip Hop Caucus. Welcome to our radio show and podcast that delivers real talk on climate change and environmental justice. No sides, just the facts and stronger communities.
We want to start off this show by thanking always WPFW, our Pacifica family, for hosting us here in the studio. And it's a big thank you for all of our listeners who tune in each week. We love you all.
Yes, most definitely. Definitely. And you can check us out on the show's blog at think100.info. And be sure to follow us online at Think 100 Show. Let me say that again, because I know we have a couple new folks who are checking us out. Definitely go to think100.info, and then you can also follow us online at Think 100 Show.
Well, Antonique and Mustafa, I'm a little melancholy. I'm still pumped up. You know what I mean? I'm still pumped up. So I want to hear from you, Antonique, but I do want to let folks know that this is going to be a special show regarding Hurricane Florence.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really want to make sure that people, know about this show and that they call in. The phone number to call in is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We're going to be discussing Hurricane Florence. We're discussing environmental justice, climate justice. We're going to discuss the manure. We're going to be discussing, a lot of things that you may or may not connect with, climate change or the environment, but they're definitely going on. But one of the things that we want to start to show up with is definitely holding up all those, who have lost their lives, because of Hurricane Florence. And so we definitely want to just make sure and for those who are still struggling, but we're going to get into that. So let me just say this, that, you know, last week, speaking of climate, you know, we were engaged, with the Global Climate Action Summit and our village. So maybe you can kind of give a breakdown on that for the people.
Yes. Oh, you guys, it was super popping in San Francisco last week. We were there hosting a week-long side event to the Global Climate Action Summit. And as a reminder, this was Governor Jerry Brown's summit that brought together leaders from around the world to, quote-unquote, take climate ambition to the next level.
Okay.
This was a big, big, big week for our movement. And so while the summit was taking place, you know, there were a number of affiliate events happening around town. We hosted 4 days worth of events at our venue, appropriately called Our Village, because, you know, it does take a village. Just like raising children, it absolutely is going to take that village to,
most definitely,
you know, win this war. You know, so we had the largest community convening during the entire Global Climate Action Summit. It was so amazing. We had over 50 indigenous leaders from around the world with us. We had over 50 leaders from communities of color from across the United States with us. We had thousands of friends from across the climate movement join us throughout the week. We had performances, I sang. We had film screenings, live art, virtual reality, which was crazy, and more. It was an incredible event focused on highlighting diverse voices, because, you know, there was definitely voices being highlighted throughout the entire summit.
That's right.
We were highlighting diverse voices and innovative actions that will allow us to win on climate change. And guess what? all three of us were a part of one of the, I would like to say, the coolest events of all. And I actually have heard from many people that our event was the coolest thing they saw all week. We did a Think 100%. It was cool. We did a Think 100% show live in front of a live audience, and it was amazing. It literally changed the game, and both people are still talking about it. We completely shut it down, and we had some good parties, too. I thoroughly enjoyed doing all the versions of the electric slide with everybody. We had a Soul Train line. We really turned up, and honestly, it was the first time I was able to do that with my fellow movement, you know, with my fellow fighters. I've never, you know, had that kind of fun. Usually after events, in the grip pool, you know what I'm saying? Everybody always feeds you after stuff, you know, maybe some alcohol, but to actually like really turn up like that, it was amazing. And San Francisco will never be the same again.
I know that's right. Y'all got to check out Antonique doing the electric slide. It's on a whole nother level.
I think if you go to Mustafa, what's your Twitter thing, Mustafa?
It's at EJ in action.
If you go there.
You put a video up?
What?
Yeah, if you go to Mustafa's Twitter handle and you check it out,
EJ
in action, and he was there filming. So, you know, you can't.
That is hilarious.
He was there. But also, Antonique, before, you know, one of the things there, for folks who are tuning in, and we'll have more conversation about this next week. The Global Climate Action Summit actually is just another place where we made some commitments about, we had people talking about how we need to keep it in the ground.
Right.
We had other conversations, you know, and I want to say this, you know, this is important. I want to make sure that folks who are tuning in, this show is going to be a special show in regards to Hurricane Florence, and we definitely want people who are in North Carolina, in South Carolina, to call in to the show, 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893 to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. And so I want to make sure we can do that. But one of the things that, Antonique, that I think was important, we're going to get to this more. I want to make sure we save time for all the folks who are calling in, and I want to hear from folks who are on the ground, and we want to have some, just hear what's going on, down there, and just hear those stories. But one of the things that was important is that, you know, a number of things came out of that, but there was some tension. So I don't want to get into that because I want us to be derailed on that, but there was some tension about how fast we move on this. So we're going to have some further conversations about that. But speaking of moving fast, I know that you literally went from San Francisco to Las Vegas and were part of the Great American Road Trip, as far as the electric vehicles, and talk about that for a minute.
You know what? It was another wonderful trip, short trip, and I was just there for the day, and I was there. I spoke at this wonderful event. Who also spoke was Michael Bloomberg. I like to call him Mayor Bloomberg because I'm from Jersey, which is right there by New York, and I spent so much time in New York, and I thought he did a great job as mayor, and I let him know that. And the head of MGM, Jim Murren, they were both a part of the New American Road Trip event that we had, and it's amazing. MGM is very soon, they've already committed to it, but very soon they'll be 90% clean energy, solar powered their entire resort.
That means I can go see the Pacquiao Mayweather fight
under
some Pacquiao solar lights.
Mayweather.
I like that. I'm ready for that.
Absolutely. The concerts and the fights and all of that will be solar power. I think that's incredible. And, you know, so the New America Road Trip is an awesome project that is taking an electric vehicle tour across America. They are literally driving two electric vehicles from California to New York in 10 days over this month. It's really wonderful. I got to drive the cars. It was a lot of fun. The New American Road Trip will be highlighting stories of people, cities, and emerging technologies that are fulfilling America's pledge on climate change, creating jobs and economic prosperity, all the while reducing climate pollution and ensuring our country's clean energy future.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about what they're doing. I think it sheds a great light on it, and it's a cool, fun way. Like, I sang a little bit, so I guess that's kind of like the carpool karaoke thing. it was just a really, really nice time.
And that's what's up. So do you feel after going through GCASH, Global Climate Action Summit, and also being a part in now actually, so in the EV electric vehicle road trip actually goes to the New York Climate Week, right?
Yes.
So it's like a linking of that. But I guess for you, I mean, you know, and I just want to make a shout out for you because you also wrote an article on GRIS, talking about the need for the artivist. You kind of mentioned it early on. And so folks should check out the article that Antonique wrote in GRIS. Just go check out this search Antonique Smith, one of the trifectas of the co-hosts for here at Think 100%. And she wrote an article that you should definitely read. I think it's important.
Thank you.
No. And this, if you can just give one of the bullet points from that, like what is an artivist? Actually, we asked the basic question.
An artivist is somebody who uses their gifts within the arts, whether it's music or in something in film, television. You know, you could be a TV writer. You could be a film director. You could be an actual artist and making sculptures. It's somebody who takes that type of, you know, a gift, ability, talent, and uses it in conjunction with their activism to make content of some sort or, you know, some form of art that speaks the messages or the issues, the solutions of what is going on in what's going on, as Marvin would say. And so, you know, I had the pleasure of writing this op-ed, and you know, honestly, I'm urging people to not only support artivists, but I'm urging more people with these talents to be artivists, to use your platform to not just speak up and not just say stuff in an interview or just, you know, make a post on social media, which is though important, but actually make special content for that post on social media. Like make some kind of video or something that could go viral. Like we need to get the word out. We need to spread the word because not everybody knows the problems. I mean, we see people dying in Hurricane Florence. We've seen people dying Katrina, Sandy. We've seen people dying, but we may not connect that to climate change. People might not understand that the wildfires in California and these record heat and even people in their own neighborhoods living near, you know, power plants or oil drilling sites. We got people in California, Los Angeles, and glamorous Hollywood living 200 feet away from oil drilling sites, and they're getting sick. And people are dying of cancer and asthma, and some of them don't even know that that's what's causing it because, of course, you know, there's another industry that would like you to believe that it's just hereditary, but it's not just hereditary. It's definitely being caused by the pollution in the environment, and people need to know this, and not only need to know it for their own sake and their own health, you know, just understanding what may be causing them to be sick, but to help join the movement so that we can fight, because the more people get together and the more people make noise, you know, we can't stay silent. We have to join together. We have to come together. We have to use our power. We're only powerful together. We're not powerful just one person saying one thing. It has to be all of us collectively fighting against, you know, the people who greedy, pretty much greedy, selfish people who don't mind making a bunch of billions off of the lives of people's actual lives. Like, human life is so important. It's really all that matters, honestly. And so, you know, joining the movement is fighting for our existence and fighting for our lives. And so the article is just encouraging people to make it cool. You know, if you make some cool, riveting, emotional content that tugs at heartstrings and helps people understand what's going on, then more people will want to join. More people will want to fight.
Well, Anthony, thank you, man. I hope everybody checks out that article. Please go to the Grist and check out Anthony Smith's article. It is a great, great, great read. So, you know, we're
going
to... Definitely. So we're going to hop right into this Hurricane Florence part. I do want to give a few shout-outs for things that are happening as we get ready to get into that. One, today, because all of this, you have to vote in this process. And so,
yes,
you know, we have a campaign, which is Respect My Vote. And today, we're very fortunate. If you check out Amber Rose's Instagram page and her Twitter and all those and her first Facebook, you know, she is leading, and that's very important because in this movement, we know there is no movement without women. And so it was definitely very powerful for Amber Rose to be with us last year, but this year she's leading on her campaign. We'll have some more talk about that coming up as well. And then also, just definitely want to make sure and mention this, that that Thursday is a day to remember for Puerto Rico, because it will be the 1 year anniversary for Hurricane Maria. And so, and how it hit Puerto Rico. We know it had it impact throughout many of the islands throughout. So we'll have more talk about that following that. But there are, if you just go to think100.info, you can find out some more information about what's happening on that front. But Antonique and Mustafa, I know our lines are filling up with some folks, and I want to make sure we can get to everybody for this special Hurricane Florence call. So, Mustafa, who do we have on the line right now?
We have L.A. Winnington Kamensky, who's on the line. Winnington, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Could you share your comment?
Sure. Thank you again for having me here. As all of you know, right now, Hurricane Florence is battering the North Carolina coast, and 1.5 million people have been ordered to evacuate their homes. So we have been involved with rescue efforts here. We've water rescued 200-plus residents, and we try to get them to emergency shelters. We're taking donations, but also in that same vein, we're talking to citizens about the devastation that is happening environmentally. At the hands of industrial corporations, such as coal ash, has flooded into water sources here and has placed our citizens into even more dire need and emergency, and the same with some of the hog wastes in the water. So we're also gearing up to help citizens in these shelters think about voting and the next steps of how to fight these fixtures that have been long-term systemic problems in their communities as we are trying to get through this disaster that is natural. But it is also man-made because of the devastation that has already been wreaking havoc on North Carolina. So that's where we are, and that's, you know, kind of the climate of what we're in.
Well, first, thank you for joining us here on Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change, and definitely you are in our prayers, and we are thinking about all of you in North Carolina. But you said a lot right there. You just said like about four or five things in that one statement. Where to donate to? What caused the problem? We have environmental justice issues. This might be natural, but it is still man-made. And you went down the lines. So I need you to just unpack a few of those things. Particularly this, you talked about the pollution and the environmental justice, injustice concerns. Can you kind of talk about that specifically for where you are and how people are dealing with that?
Okay, sure. So to kind of give a brief background, when I say kind of the pollution and the environmental injustices that has been wreaking havoc, especially on populations of color, our black and our brown citizens, we have dealt with coal ash plants and coal ash spilling into the waterways at the hands of big corporations. And we've also seen, the hog waste, actual lagoons of chemicals and, dead hog carcasses going into the waterways. It happened in Hurricane Matthew. This is a systemic problem. This happened in 1999. This happened in 2007 with the next hurricane. And guess what? We're back in the same problem because they haven't cleaned it up, and our citizens are still facing, asthma, cancer, and now rebuilding homes are going to take how long? We already saw what Hurricane Matthew did to Robeson County and to eastern North Carolina, and we're back in the same situation. So,
And real quick, for folks who don't know, because I think you know, I know you went to see your show, but give them a little background of who you are.
Oh, yes, I'm so sorry. So my name is Lanisha. Everybody calls me L.A. That's how the community knows me, Whittington Kamensky. I'm the North Carolina campaigner for Friends of the Earth, an environmental organization. I'm the co-founder of Green Responders. We're a veteran military group that goes out and actually helps with water rescue. And also a part of the Poor People's Campaign as partners. So that's a little bit of who I am and how I'm invested in this. And I'm a North Carolina native, so this is near and dear to me because this is my home, and it's been my people's home and ancestral land many, many years.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate all the work that you're doing, especially the focus on our most vulnerable communities who are often forgotten and unseen. And as we know, the ones who are disproportionately impacted in many instances from both these extreme weather events and then also the pollution that is associated with them. So we really, really appreciate you. And, is there contact information that we can share with our listeners?
Yes, please. If you do want to reach out to me directly for donations or to assist, we're looking for counselors, we're looking for ministers, we're looking for help in the shelter. My number is 919-793-8770. 877 919-793-8767. Contact me, call or text my direct line since we're in motion right now. But I will send you donation sites, everything you need to know to help us as we move forward. We just delivered a truck yesterday in the belly of the beast just last night to Eastern North Carolina. We still need donations, so please reach out.
And Ellie, before you go, I actually want to because on this show you're speaking across the country, and people are listening and tuning in. So, and sometimes where they are, they're in California, or they're in Wisconsin, or wherever they may be around the world, they may not see the rain, they may not hear, and I can definitely hear your passion, and we're with you here, I think 100%. But what would you want them to know? Like if there's, besides this donating, what would you want them to know if you can get out a couple sentences about what you want them to know about what's going on in your community?
Okay, I want to be blunt. We have been going through a fight of trying to clean up poison in our communities by the hands of Smithfield Foods and by the hands of Duke Energy. And I'm just going to lay it out the way it is. And when you see us fighting in the media, when you see us fighting on Facebook, when you see us fighting against these corporations that have, and believe me, I can send you the research, please contact me, that have been continuously poisoning us, please support us. Not just prayer, but sign on to those petitions. Sign on to be a voice to say no more to polluting, no more to not cleaning up billions of gallons of lagoon waste that is right beside residents' houses that is causing them asthma and cancer. Stop with the aerosol spraying hog waste over literally towns here in Eastern North Carolina where people can go outside and feel hog waste being sprayed on land for no reason on their skin. Stand with us. Sign with us. Keep us in your prayers.
All right,
done. Thank you so much. So we want to thank you. We're going to be with you. Mustafa, I know our lines are lit up here. I just want to make sure you get folk the phone line again. Definitely for those who are tuning in from North Carolina and South Carolina. You just had, that was LA down there in Charlotte, but we want to have the number is 202-588-0893. Mustafa, who else do we have on the line coming up next?
So we have William Barber, who's about to join us, one of the luminaries there in North Carolina. But we also, as he's about to join us, just want to make sure that folks understand the true impacts that are happening. And if you don't believe in real talk, you might want to change the channel because that's exactly what we're focusing on today. Trillions of gallons of water have fallen so far. And these floods that are, you know, moving through people's communities, moving through their homes, is serious business. And we know that at the last count, 31 lives have been lost as well. So now we're going to hear from William Barber. William, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here, my friend. Thank you for having us on.
Oh, without a doubt. Thank you for joining us, brother. Can you share a little bit about what's happening there in North Carolina on the ground?
Yeah, what we are seeing in North Carolina, you know, what we are seeing with Florence in this moment is really a moment when this work around climate change becomes very real and deeply personal. You know, before we get into it, you know, I do just want to send thoughts and prayers, deep thoughts and prayers and concern to all of the communities across the state that have been impacted by this storm. Which is really an unprecedented reality in our state. But beyond that, I want to lift up the extremely deep sentiment of resiliency and community that we've seen in terms of helping the state of North Carolina recover. But starting where I began, what we talk about, the unprecedented intensity and size of a storm such as Florence, coming further inland than we've ever seen. You know, this is climate change. When we talk about the slow crawl of this storm, how it lingered over communities and had more time to cause additional damage, you know, that's climate change. You know, when we talk about the increased unpredictability that was seen in this storm's path, you know, beyond the normal margin of error that we were accustomed to, this is climate change. You know, and then when we talk about the communities most impacted, rural, coastal communities, communities of color and modest income communities that have so long borne the brunt and been the victims of our shortcomings as a society. This is an illustration of the inequitable impact of climate change, and it becomes deeply personal. You know, when we see extreme weather events like this play out, it is the embodiment of the disproportionate impact which happens as a consequence of unaddressed climate change. And we've shown, you know, I have the chance to serve as ecological devastation chair and also work with the Climate Reality Project. You know, research has shown that climate change events like this manifest in disproportionate ways. You know, it's actually been shown that there exists disparate impact in major manifestations of climate change. Everything from the impact of catastrophic weather events like hurricanes and floodings to what we've just seen recently, to even the increased warming of the planet. You know, how hot an area is and whether that increased heat will be dangerous has been linked to both the location and amount of wealth inherent in certain communities. And low-income individuals, you know, are often bearing the brunt of these events. So what we've seen in Florence is rural eastern North Carolina, communities which have often been associated as the Black Belt, as well as the Bible Belt historically, have really been hit hard by the coming of this storm. There are now, you know, several recovery efforts being led, organizations on the ground, like I said, deep resiliency being led out of the triangle, to stand with and stand for these communities. But, you know, it really hammers home why when we talk about this climate change fight, we have to talk about this disparate impact and the fact that it does not, the consequences of climate change does not affect everyone equally.
But, so, Brother Bob, let me ask you a question on that though, on that note, because I think, first of all, thank you. This is Rev. And so, you know, I guess, as you know, I hear this, and for me coming through, and Antonique as well, who came through Superstorm Sandy, I came through my family, literally seeing the effects of Hurricane Katrina, and then seeing those things on and on, and then Hurricane Maria, and then seeing year after year, now Florence, and seeing what it does. And you mentioned this is, you know, we know that the issue in North Carolina goes back 30 plus years. We know when people from Reverend Lowry and others were gathering and fighting back in Warren County, we know that, you know, the climate movement wasn't always there side by side. We know this, and we know what could have been if people would have been putting more emphasis not only on the planet, but on the people. So as you're, you know, with Climate Reality and other groups that are large momentum groups, and how do we connect those dots? Because I really feel that, man, we can't come after the fact when people are now gone and sad and they've been swept away. Like, it's a game. How do we then hold even ourselves accountable? So it's not a game. We're not just here, you know, playing the environmental climate change game, but we're literally saying to those who are with us in solidarity, listen, our people are dying. We need to make sure they are informed way before the storm comes so they can be informed about what's happening regarding climate change, environmental concerns, environmental injustice, so that we can say back from Warren County, back from 1992 through Reverend Lowry to Reverend Fauntleroy on up, that we can say, listen, we've been engaging our communities for 30 years, not just 30 minutes. So how do you then say to them in your position, like, listen, this is not a new thing, but we gotta figure out how we can communicate this thing together.
Absolutely. I mean, to fully understand this issue, I think we, one, have to be students of history. And we have to fully acknowledge, as well as hold ourselves accountable as advocates in this movement, of that disconnect that has so often existed between EJ communities and the fight for environmental justice and the fight for CJ and climate justice. And we have to be very intentional about bridging that and saying, you know, one, recognizing that the people, when you talk about climate change, the people who suffer the most from the effects of climate change are actually the ones who contribute the least to its causes. Low-income households in the United States consume significantly less energy per capita than high-income households and are therefore responsible for less of the greenhouse gas pollution, which contributes to this reality of climate change in the first place. And so it's a very damning reality when the individuals who are least contributorily negligent to the issue are the ones who are bearing the brunt of our lack of will in terms of the issue in the first place. That's the first thing.
Yep.
The second thing is that we have to recognize, as we said, that climate change is a multiplier of other social injustices which we are faced with. So when we talk about those same areas of the Warren County, when we talk about the rural communities, when we talk about the communities with high concentrations of communities of color, you know, we must connect the ills that we often see manifest in those realities from everything from the high concentrations of persistent poverty to the low attempts of economic mobility in those areas, the high concentrations of community color, to the intentional placement and targeting of these communities for many of the environmental unfriendly aspects. You know, you look at many of the counties that were impacted in North Carolina by Florence. These are the same communities that have been targeted for the placement of this pipeline that we are now dealing with in eastern North Carolina with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which we all know, you know, natural gas is not a gateway fuel. It is actually a main contributor to the very reality of climate change that we are dealing with in the first place. So we have to acknowledge all of that, and we have to then hold ourselves accountable and say that when we look at the individuals who are forced to remain in these scenarios, we have to center them first in our analysis, center them first in the solutions that we put forth.
So now we're going to... Hey, Veronica, how are you?
I'm well.
Great. This is Mustafa. You want to sort of share, Veronica, a little bit about what's going on?
And tell the folks who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Veronica Carter. I'm on the board of directors for the North Carolina Coastal Federation. I'm also on the secretary of DEQ's Environmental Justice and Equity Board. And I live in Leland, which now has the notoriety of being in the place Jim Cantore couldn't get out of.
Mm.
I evacuated. Disclosure. It was, when I left, it was still going to be a Category 4 storm and 40 inches of rain. And fortunately, I have an uncle and aunt who welcomed me in northwestern Georgia. So I got on the road because I knew someone had to be outside in order to get information inside. And I think my decision was correct. Many of my friends, the only way they can talk or reach the outside world right now is through data. Their cell towers are down, the phone lines are cut, and so I have kind of played the telephone operator, if you will, an information gatherer for them. Some of them just got their power on. Their power went off early Saturday morning. They just got their power on in the middle of hurricanes. They were going out and trying to charge their cell phones in their cars. A lot of flooding. The town of Leland that I live in is, like Wilmington, is an island. There is no way in or out of it right now. Mm. They had to airdrop MREs in water and they've done, three different distribution points in Brunswick County, which is the county Leland is in. They've set up three distribution points in Wilmington in New Hanover County, which is right across the Cape Fear River, to get people just basic necessities. The gas stations that do have power are running out of fuel, because if I can't get in, neither can the fuel trucks and all the resuppliers of the supermarkets. One of my neighbors, I texted him yesterday, he said he was in the line with about 100 people outside of a supermarket. They were letting them in like 10 at a time.
Mm.
And even though he was in line, he knew that they had no ice, no water, and no fresh produce left.
Mm.
But, you know, they were going to get what they could get. So
walk me through. If I'm one of your neighbors and you on the outside, and I actually want to talk about what it means to make a decision to leave. Because a lot of folks couldn't. They couldn't leave not because they didn't want to.
Absolutely.
Because they couldn't afford to in
some
cases.
They didn't have the assets.
Didn't have the assets. But what you said you wanted the pipe. I like that. So if I call you, what would you tell me? I say, man, what's going on the outside world? What would you say?
The first thing I did, of course, was I was texting all of my neighbors to make sure they were okay.
Mm.
And not just my neighbors. I had friends. And I have friends in the situation you were talking about that just didn't have the means to leave, even though I offered them to come with me. I have relatives who offered to put some of them up. And some cases they wanted to stay because they had elderly parents who just flat out refused to leave. And, of course, you don't want to be in a situation I'm in right now where something happens, it's over now, you can't get back to them to go check on them. But the first thing I did was check on them, make sure everybody was okay. It was like I spent probably an hour Saturday morning just texting people, are you okay? Is everything okay? And fortunately, praise God, everything was okay for all of my friends. The next thing was I asked, you know, what time the lights went out. They told me, in my case, in my neighborhood, about 6 o'clock in the morning. And then they were asking, you know, where's the storm? Because, of course, some of them had radios, some of them didn't. In fact, one of our local radio or television stations ran out of fuel for its generator. So WWAY is now broadcasting only online because they can't. They're looking for fuel to try to get their transmitter back up. Wow. So that's how, and they, by the way, they're now in Wilmington, and that's how dire the situation is. And so in some cases, it was more like, okay, is the storm moving at all? You know, what's it doing? And it was forecast to stall, and it did stall, obviously. And one of my neighbors who stayed said, if I had to do it over again, there's no way I'd do it. She said, and I quote, her kids told her that, quote, this is the stupidest stunt you two have ever pulled by staying. So it's frightening. But, of course, if you are don't have the means to leave, I was trying to convince people who just, you know, maybe for pride didn't want to go with me or anyone else, that go to the shelter. Because my theory was at least at the shelter there'll be emergency management people there. If something happens, there'll be a sheriff's office, there's social workers, there are nurses, you know, there's health provided. And at least two of the shelters that I know of, one in Brunswick County and one in New Hanover, had to be evacuated because of water coming in. So it gets bad.
No, I want to tell you, I'm glad that you're safe. I'm glad that you are using your position. Now that you know, if the old saying would go, if everybody ain't free, nobody's free. So I like the fact that you are calling back and checking on all your neighbors, and we will definitely keep them in our thoughts. But, you know, you're on the coolest show on climate change, and you're talking to the entire nation. And so what would you want to tell folks about your community, or just to like encourage them to know about what's still happening in North Carolina?
This is going to be something, you know, first of all, it's surreal to see your community on television, you know, places that you hang out and walk and people, you know, being interviewed. And that's a little heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to see walk into a supermarket here where I can get things and see signs where they're collecting stuff for my community and I can't get to my community. Our community has so many environmental issues, environmental justice or injustice issues. You know, we couldn't drink the water in Wilmington before any of this happened because it has a substance that we call Gen X.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of bad compounds that have been dumped into the water by a company that's a spinoff of DuPont called Chemours, whose plant, by the way, is up in the Fayetteville, Cumberland County area, which is Bladen County, which is also suffering right now from flooding. Up in that area, in a lot of EJ communities, they've discovered high levels of this chemical in wells. It's in our river and in our drinking water. We have been on bottled water for the year. So the fact that we can't get bottled water is really serious because now we have a choice of not drinking any water or drinking water that not only now has Gen X in it, mm-hmm. but we have a problem with something called CAFOs, a concentrated animal feeding operation in Duplin County, which also feeds into the Cape Fear River at points. And these are large pits of hog waste. Uncovered hog waste, and those fields are now inundated with water. So that hog waste is now in our drinking water. You know, we have a coal ash pond at Lake Sutton, which had a breach. Our river keeper, Kent Burnett, bless his heart, somehow or another got out to the pit to go examine it, and there is definitely a breach and definitely spillage again into the Cape Fear River.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, besides Gen X, we're worried about hog waste and coal ash. And just to add things, whenever you have one of these hurricane things, you generally have wastewater that ends up spilling into the system. And they got something, I think, like 2.5 million gallons. I think it's the largest one ever recorded in the area, in the Wilmington area. So we will be repairing for years.
That's right.
My concern is, of course, those who have will repair. Those who have not will try to do what they can. And that's where so much will depend on local grassroots groups. The state NAACP and its different branches and affiliates are great. We will depend on our local NAACP. We will depend on our churches, our network of churches. But we just want to make sure that all of our folks, all of the people who can't and don't have, are equally taken care of. One of the advantages of sitting here being able to read all of the posts and know what was going on was we could find out things, I say we because a couple of us are out of the area, could see posts where people, we had a report that some elderly people in a public housing were without water. One, we wanted to verify it, and two, we wanted to get them some water. And so we were able to contact the police department and say, could you do a welfare check? And, oh, by the way, bring a case of water just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have good phone connectivity away from the area. I've tried to have phone conversations with a few people in the area, and it was either spotty or the phone calls dropped, or you could barely hear what they were making out. So imagine if you were trying to call someone for help with that kind of reception in the area.
Well, we definitely appreciate all the work that you're doing there from the outside, trying to keep folks connected. And as you said, we've got a lot of work to do to make sure that our communities are no longer sacrifice zones before these storms or after the storm. So thank you so much. And we're definitely going to have you back on the show. So thanks again.
Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're now going to go to Kim Porter. Kim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. This is Kim Porter with the Poor People's Campaign.
Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show. Can you sort of share with us your comment and what's going on?
Sure. I'm one of the co-chairs for the ecological devastation in North Carolina for the North Carolina Poor People's Campaign. And what we've seen here in North Carolina is Florence has had a major impact. And part of that is because of climate change and the fact that the Arctic is warming too quickly and changing the jet stream, so it's slowing the weather patterns. And Florence has been very intense and long in duration, and people are suffering. And the people who suffer the most, of course, are poor people, low-income folks, and people of color who usually contribute the least to climate change but suffer because they don't always have the means to evacuate. And so what we've seen in North Carolina is a lot of low-income folks who weren't able to evacuate the storm and who've had to be rescued, and other folks who maybe chose to stay during the storm, but most of the people didn't have a choice. In fact, talked with a friend of mine who went door-to-door. I asked her to call in. I hope she's going to be able to, but she met with 225 people in Lumberton alone, and 80% could not evacuate because they didn't have the means to do so. And that's just devastating. And then we look at the fact that Duke Energy, which is the largest corporate utility in the United States, and its headquarters is right here in North Carolina, they're contributing to climate change by using a lot of frack gas, methane gas, which is a driver in climate change, just as NASA has seen recently, has said recently. Those are the factors. Some of the factors that are making things even worse, and then the fact that, like, Wilmington, North Carolina was cut off from the mainland, and people couldn't get out. And then we see things like people at a Family Dollar in Wilmington who couldn't get supplies, who didn't have a lot of money, and they were in there getting water and other things. And, you know, that's survival. That's survival.
That is.
And the police were wanting to arrest them, and were saying that they were looting. And actually, in this situation, I was really happy to find out that Family Dollar actually said, we don't want these people arrested. And I commend them for that, because it's a survival situation. People don't know if they're going to live day to day. They don't have supplies. They don't have resources. And the storm has just been devastating, not only down in the eastern part of the state, but also I live in Asheville, and we saw in Black Mountain, just 15 miles away, where three different trailer parks were evacuated because of flooding up in the mountains. So, you know, it's hit Charlotte, it's hit all over our state, not just the eastern part, but of course the eastern part saw the worst and is still seeing the worst part of the storm.
Well, Kim, I want to ask you this question. This is Rev. You, and thank you for tuning in. And for those who are listening, you are tuning in to Think 100%, the coolest show on climate change. This is our special on hurricane flows. I'm so happy that made you laugh. That made my day. Actually, to tell you this is the coolest show on climate change and all that's going on, you chuckle, made me actually feel pretty good about that. So that actually is a good thing there. We can bring a little smile to our dear brothers and sisters down in North Carolina and South Carolina. That's what this is about. But I know that with you working with the Poor People's Campaign and all that you do, I guess one of the things is that, you know, is how we fight poverty and pollution at the same time. But one of the things you mentioned is this, and I just want to do a quick shout out. This week, actually, there's going to be a HBCU climate conference in New Orleans. And I bring that up because tomorrow, one who's speaking is Dr. Ben Chavis, who is part of the Wilmington 10 and many other things in Wilmington. And so the issues of poverty in Wilmington, the issues of destruction have been going on for quite some time. So what are the ways that you think now moving forward that we can fight poverty and pollution at the same time?
Well, you know, I mentioned Duke Energy. They, like I said, they're the largest corporate utility in the country. They're contributing to climate change by still utilizing a coal ash plant. We saw in eastern North Carolina where a coal ash lagoon was compromised by the storm. We need to quit fossil fuels altogether.
I know that's right.
We need to quit fossil fuels. We don't need to be saying that frack gas, that methane is an alternative or a bridge to anything else. No, it's not. It pollutes our environment. It's wrecking our earth with the global warming. And we don't need the Atlantic Coast Pipeline here in North Carolina and in Virginia going down towards South Carolina. So we need to fight back against ACP Pipeline, against the Mountain Valley Pipeline that they're proposing also in North Carolina. We need to fight against fossil fuels. We need to be utilizing solar power with battery backup in North Carolina, because that is the viable option with North Carolina Clean Path 2025. That's a plan to move forward with the solar and battery backup. Wind is great, but right now there's a moratorium on that in North Carolina. I actually work as a community organizer for NC Warn, and that's a climate justice organization. It's a partner with Poor People's Campaign, and we've worked with Ecological Devastation and ncwarn.org. We are organizing for money to go to frontline communities, straight to the communities. But let's be honest, we need to prevent another atrocity like this from happening. We need to prevent climate chaos altogether. We need to eliminate fossil fuels and biofuels, and we need to be utilizing solar and wind in general.
I know, that's right. Well, I want to thank you for being on, and thank you for what you're doing. So we just want to, we want to make sure and just definitely applaud you for your efforts. So,
yeah. And Kim, can you share with folks one last time as we transition to the next caller, how many people couldn't escape? Give them again that percentage that couldn't escape.
From what Adrienne told me, she went door to door with her sister, 225 homes. This is just one day when I spoke with her. Okay. She's done much more than that. But in one day, 225 homes in the Lumberton area, she estimated 80% of those residents could not evacuate because they did not have the means. They didn't have transportation or they didn't have the money to do it. And that's an atrocity. And you know what? We need to prevent this from happening again. It's happening all over the world. And there's just no excuse for it. When we can actually drastically reduce, you know, the effects of global warming by utilizing solar, wind, other renewable energy sources. And that's what we need to be doing. It's a moral issue. That's what the Poor People's Campaign says. This is a moral issue. And we have to stop this craziness from happening. We need to organize, we need to mobilize, we need to fight back. And we've got people on the front lines, people, community members who've been saving people. Over 900 people in North Carolina have been saved. I think the numbers are much more higher than that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at, you know, not just organizations that are doing this, Red Cross and other people, but actual community members like my friend Adrienne who are on the front lines rescuing people in boats. Rescuing people, going door to door, risking their own lives. But you know what? We know that corporations are helping to make the situation worse. And this thing, hog farming, industrial hog farming. We look at the consequences of that, the pollution, hurting our neighbors, hurting a lot of low-income folks, people of color, and the fact that with this storm, we don't even know the effects from hog farming. I've heard people say, well, they got some of the hogs out of the way up to higher ground. You know what? We've got to worry about these cesspools. We've got to worry about the poultry, the agribusiness. We have to worry about the coal ash, like I mentioned earlier. And we don't need to just worry about it. And we need more than thoughts and prayers. Those are great, but we need action, and we need action now. We're in a crisis situation, and we really need to unite. We need to come together, unite, fight back, and make a difference.
Well, all right. All right. Thank you, Kim. We appreciate you. We're now going to go to Larry. Larry, are you on the line?
I am here, yes.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, Larry. We appreciate you.
Good to be here.
Hey, Larry, welcome to Think 1%, the coolest show on climate change. Where are you from, and tell us about where you are, your situation.
I'm in New Bern, North Carolina. I'm not downtown New Bern, so I didn't get hit as bad, but, I am the Crystal Coast Waterkeeper with Waterkeeper Alliance, and, have been involved in the concentrated animal feeding operation, work for about 16 years. So do a lot of flying, aerial flying, to look at the impact from this, hurricane on the animal industry, which again we call CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operation.
And can you share, I think many people might not know about, I heard a little bit about New Bern in the news. Can you share what's going on there and how that's been devastated?
Sure. New Bern is at the, where the Trent River comes into the Neuse River, in eastern North Carolina. And, because of that, it's fairly prone to some flooding issues anyway. But with this storm that came through, pretty much all of downtown New Bern was underwater. You know, we have seen from the air that you have power boats and sailboats actually up some of the streets because they got washed up into the town and were left there. You know, people were stranded. There were a lot of rescues that came out of New Bern because of the amount of water that came into the town. So New Bern, the town itself, was not and still is not in all that great a shape.
And when you say that, you got it. I think people who are listening from all over around the country, I think that was a kind of nice, but you might need to kind of explain that a little bit more. When you say not in that great a shape, what does that mean?
Well, many if not all of the buildings in what we consider downtown New Bern, have some degree of flood damage to them. You know, some could be several feet, some maybe not that much. There are even some of the government buildings that were impacted. So when I say New Bern's not in good shape, you know, think about a day or so or more of water in the streets, in the buildings, in people's homes, in the businesses. And it kind of gives you a picture of what New Bern looked like. Now the waters are down as of today, but you know, as your listeners probably know, when you have water in your house, the damage is done. Mm-hmm. And so the cleanup, the restoration of a very historic town in North Carolina. New Bern is the second oldest town in North Carolina. And, you know, the cleanup, restoration, rebuilding of particularly the town of New Bern is going to be pretty monumental. There are a number of communities outside of the town that also have the same address, but they're not downtown, that were also heavily, impacted. A little area called River Bend, another place called Fairfield Harbor. You know, just an incredible amount of water that came into these places. So the devastation here that you're hearing about on the news is very real. You know, where the next concern that we have for what's happening here is when this hurricane came on shore, it just went further into North Carolina and South Carolina inland. So huge amounts of rain were dropped pretty much all across the state. So now we have the issue of drainage and potential flooding from the water that was upstream. So we're just not sure how much of that is coming our way. But the town of New Bern, and sorry if you're probably hearing a little chainsaw in the background, the town of New Bern could be threatened again by floodwaters, depending on how much we get.
Well, Larry, we're definitely going to keep you in our prayers, and we appreciate you calling in and sharing with the country a little bit about what's happening there in North Carolina. So please keep us updated.
Right. We keep flying. We keep looking at the area from the air, taking pictures. So we'll just let me know if you need anything else.
All righty. Well, thank you so much. We're now going to go to Allie Sheffield. Allie, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Hi, Allie. It's great to hear your voice. Can you share with folks who you are, where you're at, and some of the things that are going on?
Well, my name is Allie Sheffield. I'm in Pender County, North Carolina, which is a little bit, is the county north of Wilmington. And what's going on is flooding, water, water, water everywhere. That's all you can see. I actually evacuated to Durham because we knew the forecast the day before the hurricane was that there was going to be 35 inches of rain, which there was. And so I've evacuated to Durham, but doing my best to keep up with what's going back on back at home.
Allie, I want to give you the we're coming to the end of our show here, and I actually want to give you the last word here in this last minute. What would you want people to know about what's going on in North Carolina from your perspective?
It's devastated. I mean, it's really devastated. It's sort of biblical. It's almost like Noah and his ark could come along. We're going to really need a lot of help from everybody in this country to get folks back in houses and fed. And I hope that your listeners will support the good organizations that will be doing that.
Well, Allie, thank you so much. And for everyone, our lines are so still full of folks calling in. Please go to think100.info, and we will continue this conversation online. And then go and use hashtag.
The hashtag is at Think100Show.
At Think100Show is the Twitter, and then and definitely that, and the hashtag for that as well is hashtag Think100. But we want to thank everybody for tuning in. Mustafa, any last words?
We just have to stay focused. As so many of the callers have shared with folks around the country today, that the impacts that have been happening in North Carolina didn't just start today. But because of our reliance on fossil fuels, it has been turbocharging the atmosphere, causing these extreme weather events to be even more devastating. And so we've got to get our arms around this, Rev, and we've got to stay focused, and we can't forget about our most vulnerable communities.
And I think on that note, I think we'll turn to our co-host, Anthony Smith, and going on that.
Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. But here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. The smiles return into the faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. But here comes the sun, little darling, here comes.